Hey guys, welcome back to another podcast episode. This episode is going to be back to a question. It's actually a series of questions that I received from a guy via email. It says, what I wanted to ask of you is how you managed to get strong recall with your setter without the e-collar. So to give you a little bit of background, he first started out, found us through our YouTube channel, is what he said. Then he started listening to our podcast. He had some really nice things to say about them, and he found details in figuring out how to be patient, and he found it motivating and even inspiring at times, some of the stuff we were talking about. So I really appreciate that. He has a two-year-old GSP. He describes it as okay as far as its foundation. The dog's not steady, as he says. He is really distracted easily by outside. When he's outside, he does pretty good in lower distracting areas, like in the house. I don't think this is abnormal. I think this is something that a lot of people can relate to. He struggles with heel and recall and place and retrieving when he's outside in distracting areas. So then he said he's listened to some of the podcasts, and he decided to take a step back. He's working on starting to build the foundation again. He talks about a podcast episode that we did a while ago about e-collars. And he references it, and he says, I want to ask, how are you going to manage to get recall with your setter without an e-collar? It wasn't the topic of that podcast, and you didn't go into much detail on it, but you did mention that you are able to achieve control and recall with the setter without the collar. He would like to get away from using an e-collar on his GSP. So that was his biggest question. And he also brought up a point where he said, with a two-year-old dog, he realizes he's got a bit of a hill to climb. But he thinks his biggest challenge right now is balancing freedom and exercise. He says, I know that stimulating heel sessions where he has to think and use his brain will be more tiring than a 20-minute unstructured walk around the neighborhood when he's pulling and sniffing. But at the same time, he thinks he needs to balance that with some off-lead time and give him the ability to run. So any advice is appreciated. So that was the first message, how it started out. So I'm going to touch on that right away. So I think he's right. I do think that you have to balance that, all of that stuff. And I think that word balance is so important in training that it applies to just about everything you're doing. So I do think that, so with recall, with my setter, how did I do it? Well, I really did it the same way I did it with a lab. I just don't think that, because these species, you know, because they vary by breed, a dog is a dog. And I think that a lot of the things that I accomplish with a dog is the same regardless of what type of dog it really is. Because I just think dogs think and act in a certain way. And if you can figure out how to get them to understand what you want, I think most dogs have this thing inside of them that is this willingness to please. And so it's really figuring out how to speak their language. So I got her to recall the same way. And now I didn't wait till she was 2 years old either. And I think that that was a smart thing on my part, because she's what I would call a pretty high powered dog. She's not big by any means, but she's strong, and she's got a lot of heart, and she's fast, and she's very athletic. So I think that that part of it was a huge advantage, because I started when she was pretty little. And with her, I started from the beginning when she was little and she had natural tendencies to want to be with me. So if I hadn't done that and I had started when she was a little bit bigger and it was easier for her to run off and do what she wants to do, I think the approach that I take is it's similar to what I'm doing with retrieving with her. I don't retrieve out in the big open spaces with her, because she's just not there yet. And she's going on 2.5 years old. So, but in my own defense, I don't really care about her retrieving, and that's not a focus of mine right now. Hasn't been a focus of mine to this point. But if I want to work with her and get her to be a better retriever, I will have to do what I have done, which is work on that in a more controlled environment. get the behavior to be so good there that it becomes a stronger habit than the desire or temptation of outside stuff. So that's how I would do it. With you, I don't think you can start training a dog that's big and strong and wants to run away to recall to you in an area that they have the ability to run away. Because you're just not, it's just not going to work, and you don't have the tools or the ability. And I don't want to have to put those tools in ability. I don't want to have to put those tools into play that would allow me to do that, if that makes sense. A collar would work for that. A check cord would work for that. I would prefer to not have to use those things in order to start shaping the behavior. And then I would rather, so my idea of it is start simple and build my way up instead of starting in the more challenging environment and using tools to allow myself to do it. It's just my preference. So that's how I would do that. In your second question here, you say, and so the reason that's anticlimactic for some, and maybe for you is, Brian, the idea that I can't give you a magic pill. I can't just give you a drill that and say, here, do this. This will fix it. Because it's just not that simple. That's the unfortunate part. The fortunate part is the dog's only 2 years old. And when I say that, it's only 2 years old, but it's got 2 years of habits. So in order to change it, you're going to have to be real good. You're going to have to be a pretty good hand here. And you're going to have to be really consistent. And what you'll have to do is you'll have to eliminate the opportunities for failure, which might mean you don't allow the dog to free run if in an area that you need to get him back to. So an extension of that is, you know, and I'll tell you right now, my ability to recall Makena, our setter, is pretty good. But I'm not going to take her next to a highway and let her free run. I'm not going to. It's not that good. Where I would with my labs, because her natural, just the way she is, I do believe that there could be situations where something, a rabbit or bird or whatever, gets her attention and is stronger than my ability to say, Makena, come here. Now, I weigh that. I measure that myself. So if I feel like it's too high risk of an area, I don't put her in the position to fail. So what do I do? Because, you know, there are spots where we hunt that are pretty close to roads. I don't hunt her in those areas. Instead, what I would do is I would understand where I'm going with her. I would put her on a lead, or I would at least have her under control until her heel, maybe not on lead. Because I do think that if I put her on lead, or if I tell her to heel, I can walk her past some really distracting stuff with a lot of confidence. What I wouldn't do is let her go out and start free casting like hunting and expect her to just be called off of a really distracting thing in an area that could be a little bit dangerous. So me as the handler, I have to read the situation. I'm not going to hunt her by roads. I'm not going to hunt her in situations that I'm not going to free run her either by roads. I'm not going to free, like my labs. And I would say with all of them right now, except Rain, who is just over a year old, I don't trust her enough. Now I trust her a lot, but I don't quite trust her enough to say, I'm going to let you go to the bathroom next to a highway that's kind of busy off lead. I still put her on a lead. She's going to have, I just got to get a little bit more confidence in her. I got to feel a little bit better about it. And I'm not going to test it next to a highway for the first time, because if we fail, we can't go back. So she'll incrementally, I'll work my confidence up with her to be able to put her in those situations. So, and I don't think that's different with anything in training that we do. It's just some of these things that you're talking about are just really dangerous. And so I feel like there are certain things with certain dogs where I'm not going to take the chance or the risk. So how do I get to that point that I want? Like, how do I get to the point where I feel like I can let her go? Well, that is going to take time. It's going to take work. It's going to take replicating drills over and over and over again. It's going to take my building a trust. It's no different than to simplify this and take this back a step so that everybody, I think, can hopefully relate to it. There was a point when I started running Makina, our setter, and remember, she's my first pointing dog. She's the first dog I wanted to encourage to get out and get away from me. Normally, I don't do that with a Labrador. I want them to stay close to me. You're working for an opposite effect. I want the dog close and working tight. I want the setter to go out and run. And that's a very difficult thing to do in the sequence that I had done it. Because it was it really isn't that difficult. It was difficult for me. Because for so many years, I didn't realize or recognize that there comes a point in trusting and believing and having faith in the dog that it will do what it's supposed to do. Whether you have, and quite honestly, me, I had nothing to do with it. So this is really simple stuff, but really hard to do. And hard to accept and hard to let go of and hard to encourage and say, go out, get out of sight from me. I have a belief in you and you're going to do the right things. That took time. It took as much time for me as it did for her, maybe more for me than it did for her to do that. Because there was a time where she didn't want to go out. She wanted to stay by me. She liked me. I tried to take advantage of that window. I always try to take advantage of that window. But then it came to a time where she decided she trusted and got confident and nature took over and she wanted to go out and search for things. And I had to accept that and be okay with that. And that creates a lot of tension in me. And that especially early on, that created a lot of stress, quite honestly. And it was hard and I wanted to call her back. And I see it and I understand why people do it. Because there got to a point where I would, if I had allowed myself to do this, I would have just been constantly calling her back and creating an undesirable habit at that point, because she probably would have responded at that point in her life because she was coming off of like working with me pretty closely. But I had to let her go. And then once I let her go, I had to literally tell myself, don't call her back and don't freak out. And that's where the bell helped me quite a bit, because as soon as the dog got out of sight for me, I would get nervous. But once I had the bell on, it allowed me to really extend it. I didn't have to see her anymore, but I still felt connected to her. And one option a lot of people use is the GPS. I like GPS. I think it's great. I think way too many people become reliant on it. I was thinking about this more recently. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed to tell you how much time I look at screens in a day. I look at my phone. I look at the computer. I look at my screen in my truck. I'm looking at screens way too much. And so when I train dogs, it's the last thing I want to look at. And like I said, I'm embarrassed at how much I've become dependent of them. When it comes to training dogs, I don't want to be dependent. So I have put my screen away. I'm not even running her on a GPS. I haven't been running her on a GPS for the last several months. And I've talked to some people about it. And I have the confidence in her. It's taken time. But going back to what I was going to say, if you take that dog and you let it start running and you don't look at the GPS and you don't whistle for her, you don't call for her, and you just wait it out, I found that within a matter of a few minutes that felt like hours, the bell comes back and here she is. She did develop a pretty nice pattern. So again, I think it's figuring out how to truly believe in your dog. I think you got to have faith in them. I think you slowly build up that confidence, and it doesn't just happen. I think you got to earn it. I think you have to work with them to develop it. But for me, that's been the way everything has been with all my dogs. And I think that comes back to really starting to understand and feel the dog and have the dog understand what the real expectations are. None of that stuff happens fast. So Sorry, I can't give you the quick fix for that, but there is a fix for it. It just takes time, and it takes patience, and it takes your willingness to be able to ride that out. Because I always tell people, when you do stuff with dogs, it's not necessarily forever, but it's for now, until you can start to develop the right behavior. The lead might be it for a while, the check cord. I just wrote an article about it for Gun Dog. I included this, but I still take Makena out to go to the bathroom on a lead. We have leads hanging by our back door. When I take her out to go to the bathroom, I take her out on a lead. And the reason is because I know her well enough that our bird field is not far from here. And I've got a Johnny house full of quail that's not far from the backyard. And it's not a fenced in backyard. And if I just let her out, she is going to go look for them. That's not something I can fault her for. It's something I've worked to try to develop in her and bring out. It's in her naturally, and I've tried to bring it out and enhance it. So instead, my fix to that has been put her on a lead in those situations and help her succeed. Very simple. It's not necessarily what everybody wants, but it's a little more work. I make it work. Now, you had another question here, was regarding birds. So this is kind of along those lines. It said you were going to get, I'm going to see if I can find it here quick so I can read it out. You had brought up something about having ducks and chickens, I think. It says, my wife and I are considering building a chicken coop. I want to ask you about raising birds while having those hunting dogs. I'm worried that having the chickens and desensitizing my dog will make them less interested in birds when we're out hunting. Given that the birds you raise, pheasants and ducks, are the same type of birds that you're hunting, I wanted to know how you avoid the issue. Well, I've got a pigeon coop right outside. It's an old corn crib that I've kind of turned into a pigeon coop. I think it actually works pretty nice. It's not like a house, like a pigeon coop that you would imagine that's like a building. It's open air. They fly around in there. Works really well for me. I have a Johnny house that is more of an enclosed, looks like an outhouse, but has quail in it. That's not far. It's just over outside it's on our property, but it's not very far from the house. We used to raise some pheasants. I didn't do that last summer. Went to the quail instead, but I think and this is a really good question, because my buddy Chris and I wondered about this when we got bird dogs. We wondered, like, keeping these pigeons, they're right there. They're just outside of my yard. And I was kind of concerned about it. And I talked with Jerry Coulter about it. And because most bird dog setups have that kind of stuff around. And it's a good question to wonder, are they going to lose their interest in it? I can tell you that I don't think it does. I don't think it hurts them. I think in the way he describes it is, it's all in context. So if it's in my yard, it becomes normal. Like we do not have chickens. My neighbors do. Makena's almost 2.5 years old. Just the other day, she realized the neighbors have chickens. There was a couple piles of feathers left after she decided. She pointed them for a while, and then on my way to her, it became too tempting, and she chased a few down. And what was interesting was once she caught them, because she can catch those chickens, once she caught them, she didn't know what to do with them. I thought it was kind of interesting. I'm glad she didn't kill them. She took a few bites of feathers out of their butts and really kind of lost interest in it at that point. Now, a wild bird, she never catches. And so that's kind of created a bit of a fire in her, which, good, bad, or indifferent, is there. I talked about it with my wife, and I said, you know, I don't know, maybe our daughter kind of wants chickens. We've had chickens before. We've got chicken coops. We've thought about it. I think it would be a great training opportunity, actually, for her to understand, and it would be training. You'd have to train it, because she would treat them the same way that she would the neighbor's chickens that first time. But we would have to introduce her to understand, you don't chase these. You leave these alone. My other dogs over the years have become so accustomed to them. Now, I do think from a training standpoint, there's a balance there too. And so I don't want a dog to never have an opportunity to pick a bird up. I don't want to, but in the context of our yard, yes, I think it can be looked at differently. And I don't know that I believed that so much prior to having the bird dog and the pigeons and the, because if I put a pigeon out in a launcher or I tuck a pigeon in or I take a quail and I put it and let them out of the house versus having them in that coop or in that house, my dog treats them completely different. And so, and I don't use them a lot. And this is a good bird dog question for some. And I think it's a debate that will go on forever. Some people say using birds too much, they get old and boring. That could be. I don't use them that often. And because I don't use them that often, I do think they've maintained a pretty high level of interest to Makena. I've not seen her. She's got some pretty nice style on a pigeon in a trap. What the difference between that and a wild bird is a wild bird more intense? Maybe, probably a little bit. I would say it is, but it's not like she's real flat on a pigeon. What I can say happened is she's seen enough repetition of pigeons and traps in like an organized fashion, if you will, training, that we've used that quote unquote desensitization to something like that. It's just a little less tempting, I'll call it. And we've used that to our advantage to slowly work her way into being steady on them. When we first started out, she wasn't. We just kept working on it, kept chipping at it. And finally we're to the point now where I have 100% confidence on her in a pigeon and a launcher. She's not going to break on them. She's still going to break on a wild bird. But she's like when we first, on wild birds, she's like when we first started out on pigeons. She broke on them all the time to start. Then I started, and I encouraged her to, and I was okay with her for a while, created that habit. Then I changed the rules a little bit and started to make her so that she couldn't break on them. And I slowly worked my way into having her understand, oh, I can't do this anymore. The rules have changed. And then it became 25% of the time she'd stand them and 75% of the time she'd move. And then it would be she'd move quite a bit, and then she'd move a little less and a little less and a little less until the percentage of time she didn't move or didn't move much went up and the amount she moved was less. And so it was this sliding scale of eventually we just started to shape her into the behavior that we wanted. It got better, it got better, it got better to the point right now where I go, if I put a pigeon out there, she could get right on top of it before she smells it and point it, and I could launch it basically in her face. It's super tempting. And I feel really confident she's not going to break. On a wild bird, all the right things have to be there. It has to be at the right distance. If it's too close to her, it's too much. If she sees it, it's probably too much. There's a lot of variables there. But we're working the same process with a wild bird that we did with the pigeons and then the quail. And now looking for some woodcock to kind of transition us a little bit too, because the grouse are really hard. But the grouse are like the major league pitcher and the pigeons are like the T-ball. You start with T-ball and you work your way up to the harder stuff. And when you first start out, T-ball is pretty hard. So it's the same idea. And I think you're going to do the same thing. So I think getting the birds is a process. It's not a insert birds, everything goes good because you're going to give the dog a magic pill that makes it happen. No, you're going to incrementally start simple and build up. That exact thing that I just said could and should be used with everything we do with the dog, in my opinion. So I touch on your recall. I touch on your the idea of not having the control with the collar. I think I touched on these on the bird question. Brian, you had a variety of questions over the years here, or over the course of several emails. I think I got them for you. Unfortunately, I just don't have the magic pill. And if I did, I'd be retired and on a beach. But I just don't think that I don't think that exists in dog training. So I would say keep watching the videos in the private library. Keep watching, listening to the YouTube podcast stuff. Those are tools that I think have helped you and are going to continue to help you. The more you take in, the more you'll be able to pick up little parts and apply to your dog. So Brian, I hope that helps you with your GSP. Guys, thank you for listening. If you do me a favor, share and or give a rating to the podcast if it's something that you like. It will help us grow it and reach more people, which ultimately is our goal. Thank you guys for the support. I really appreciate it, and we'll keep recording these for you.